T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Herbie, let's go.
Lawrence Holmes live from Chicago, middays noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and Odyssey Station.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Anthony Herron.
All we got to do is do our job and punch him in the mouth every single play.
Bears Monday with Big Ant.
One of the offensive linemen from Indiana just starts like kind of ramming my face in the ground, basically, in the midst of a pile of bodies. So I, with my dexterity that I have and the flexibility, I rear back while my face is in the ground, and I just kick him in the chest. So all the officials see is a big body, a big Hoosier body flying backwards, and my foot being the reason why.
He gave me some kind of Bruce Lee cross kick or something.
I kicked the out of him.
Sirius XM and Fox 32 football analyst.
They have no idea what goaded me into doing that, so I end up getting ejected from the game because I kicked this dude in the chest and he goes flying.
Oh, yeah! Look at you! You was popping all that good a second ago, then you got kicked in your chest.
Anthony Herron and Lawrence Holmes on 670 The Score.
You did get kicked in your chest. It is a Horizon Therapeutics Bears Monday here on The Score. Big Ant Herron joins me on the Circuit Resort and Casino Hotline. Circuit Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. You can watch Anthony Herron on Channel 32. You can listen to him here. You can see him doing college football. And he does all the stuff. We know this. This is why he's on the show. Big Ant, how are you, sir?
All the stuff, Loho. I'm good, man. This is a new year. We still twitching out here. And, yeah, it's good, man.
Twitch.
That's right. Hopefully some answers to various questions on the way sometime in the not-too-distant future.
How did you consume yesterday's game?
Through the lens of youth and vigor and development and just curiosity for what this team will look like in the seasons to come, you know, who's worthy of maybe trying to build around, who is earning the opportunity to sort of definitively be a piece of whatever the Bears will be next season. Because, you know, this year has a lot of folks have viewed this year as a wash for probably longer than I have, but certainly in these last few weeks of the season, I'm just looking at it like, all right, how good can Darnell Mooney be? Can Darnell Mooney be a number one? If he can't, how good of a number two can he be? Can he be a 1A? Well, do you have two rookie tackles who maybe have potential to be something that kind of bookends your offensive line for a long time to come here? Can Travis Gibson be like a legit starter? And, you know, obviously the draft status and the finances of some of these guys and the way we evaluate them end up factoring into how we perceive them at the moment. Is it above or below expectation or the resources that have been devoted to them? But a lot of that, that at least me through my lens in these last few weeks, and certainly will be the case next weekend, is what can this guy do? What will this guy mean for the Bears moving forward?
Let's talk about Travis Gibson. He obviously had an incredible game yesterday. Through the 16 games, how would you evaluate him?
Like a lot of what I've seen. You know, he's whatever, like a fifth round pick or something from last year. And, you know, I think we can view him through that lens of development. And I think we've seen players on that side of the ball in the defensive front seven, some in the secondary even throughout Ryan Pace's time here. We say, okay, that's a spot where they have been able to develop competent football players, starters in some scenarios, and maybe Travis Gipson can be that. Now, you know, there are expectations that come with that spot, and, you know, who knows what's going to happen with the guys who, at least in theory, would be ahead of him, and the finances invested in that edge position, that outside linebacker, that pass rusher between Mack and Quinn, and what we've seen those guys accomplish in their time here in Chicago. Certainly Robert Quinn this season kind of rewriting his Bears story, which has been really fun to watch that play out. But for Travis Gipson, he's obviously going to be on the squad. Is he going to be on the squad as a guy who you look at him and say, that's a starter? I'm not there with that. I mean, he's worthy of starting. We watched him start this season.
Right, he started seven games this season.
Exactly, but is he a starter on like a high-level defense that week in and week out you can expect a high level of play from? I'm not there yet, but I'm seeing development. There are strides being made with it, and we view him through the lens of this guy who was kind of a mid-to-late-round draft pick differently than when they drafted Leonard Floyd in the top 10, like through two seasons. Leonard Floyd was a better football player than Travis Gipson is right now, but he was viewed as being so disappointing because he was a top 10 draft pick. So Gipson still has some ground to cover in my mind, but for where he's drafted and where he is right now, very impressed and really encouraged in what he can potentially become.
Let's get inside football a little bit, because this is a position that you know very well. When you're in position to make the play of you're getting close to the quarterback, how do you determine how you're going to attack the quarterback, whether to get him around the waist or to swipe at the arm to get the ball down?
It's a millimoments notice to make that determination, because if you're still engaged with a blocker, like one of the biggest differences between this season and last season for Robert Quinn is, you know, his ability. He would rush with some pad level last year, but once you got to the apex of the rush, to be able to keep your cleats in the ground and continue to fight pressure with speed and maintain that flat back, the low rush angle that makes it so difficult for these tall, these angular offensive tackles to stay down there and fight your pressure to ward you away from the quarterback. He's doing that a lot more effectively this season. What we saw on the sack that ended up, you know, counting as a sack yesterday that broke the record, he was no longer engaged with the blocker. He had sort of popped tall and was fairly vertical by that point. And he's just standing next to Mike Glennon at that point. He just swipes down at the ball and kind of gets rid of it by then. And when you're not engaged with the blocker anymore, then it's, you know, a little easier when your momentum has already sort of come to a halt to just kind of swipe down at it. But you saw Lawrence Taylor popularize it, and there was a lot of edge rushers that began to mimic what Lawrence Taylor used to do, where he was rushing the corner and still engaged with the blocker, and he would turn that upfield shoulder and turn the upfield hip to be able to swipe down at the ball as he was going past the quarterback. So in a position where he wasn't necessarily going to get a clean hit on the QB, he could still get those shoulders and hips turned, the upfield shoulder and hip, to be able to swipe down at the ball to create a strip sack, even at a moment where the blockers engaged him and is basically riding him up the field where he wasn't actually going to hit the QB clean. And so sometimes it's when you're actually, you know, being run past the QB where you're swiping away at it. But a lot of times when you're still engaged with the blocker, it can be hard. You're still reaching, but you're not necessarily going to get, you know, in a position where you can actually get your body wrapped around the QB. And you're just kind of judging that just depending on the angle of your body and where the QB is in relation to you.
How good a feeling is that versus just an ordinary sack?
Oh, the ordinary sack is, but by ordinary sack, you mean when you can actually just envelop and collapse the sternum,
yeah,
of the quarterback. You always prefer that. You prefer the good, clean, flush hit in pretty much all scenarios. Now, where, you know what, you're not likely to end up, even if you knock the ball away, you're probably not going to be the one who actually recovers it, picks it up, runs away with it. And like Travis Gipson, what he got on that very first play of the game, where he's just unblocked and you bring all of your unbridled force into the soul of the QB when he doesn't see you coming, that's a great feeling. Like, I mean, Travis Gipson's riding high the rest of the game after that, where you can start off with that moment, but you're not going to be the guy to recover. You're not the guy with the country fumble. Like, the city fumble is where there's a whole lot of population around you, and you can maybe just, if you try to pick it up and run with it, then somebody else is probably going to beat you to it. So a lot of times you just try to fall on the ball. That's the way I used to teach D-line play. If it's a city fumble, you got to fall on it and make sure we get the recovery. If it's a country fumble, you do what Bilal Nichols did. It's just you. Maybe there's a teammate. In this case, it was Roquan Smith nearby. You clamp it. Once you know you got possession, you pick it up, scoop it, and try to get it to the end zone. But Travis Gibson was not involved in that because he did have that good flush hit where he's taking Mike Glennon out. But those feel much better than just getting a pure strip sack where you're not actually laying contact on somebody.
I thought about you while I was watching the Bama-Cincinnati game, because I'm watching Desmond Ridder, who's a player that I really like. And in the Alabama defenders and the defensive line, when they couldn't get there, they did a great job of getting their hands up. And yeah. And I was like, ooh, there is a bunch of tape that scouts are going to look at on Desmond Ridder now and go, has problems with this. So what was it that they did that allowed them to knock those passes down? And what will Ridder have to do if he does want to be a first-round pick in this year's draft to get better at not allowing that to happen?
Now, some of it is by feel. So some of the feel for finding a throwing window, some of it in pretty frequently isn't coached. Like I've talked to you a bit before about guys like Drew Brees and Russell Wilson, who not only do they have sort of that over-the-top delivery for their throwing motion, which makes them, you know, it basically makes their release point taller than some quarterbacks who are even taller than them, who maybe have a little more sidearm to their throwing action. But Aaron Rodgers can still get away with a lot of the sidearm sort of throwing action that he has. And Russell Wilson will drop his arm, you know, drop his elbow down and go sidearm on some throws also, even though he's a shorter guy, because a lot of it is just the feel that certain quarterbacks have for finding that window. Where Desmond Ridder, I think, needs to continue improving is to actually get his body into position, because he doesn't strike me as a guy, and I haven't evaluated him for the draft yet in much detail, but just in watching a couple of the games in some detail that I have for Cincinnati this season, he doesn't strike me as a guy who, once the play is out of rhythm, either he can, you know, scramble to extend the play, but he's not necessarily showing me so far from what I've seen to be a guy that can just sort of manipulate the pocket, you know, keep that throwing temperament within the pocket while he's moving his body. And it might just be a subtle shift of the hips. It may be just a sort of like retreat step where you step backwards a little bit to retreat from the pass rush and working to find the window where you know that route combination will appear and that opportunity is going to present itself to throw the ball. But you're basically evading not even sheer physical pressure in your presence, but just getting your body into a position where you're going to deliver it through a window that's there. And so Alabama, they're not a defensive front that's knocked down an obscene amount of balls at the line of scrimmage this year, but Ridder hasn't shown himself to be a QB that's really effective at just those subtle movements, those like Tom Brady-esque movements in the pocket that don't mean you got to run away from somebody to do it, but you're getting your body, you're getting your presence and your platform in a position where you can still deliver it through a window that appears.
I'm fascinated by the development of Jalen Hurts. And I think that it's a decent comp to Justin Fields. I think that Fields is bigger. I don't know if he's stronger because Jalen Hurts is a power lifter. I do think that he has a stronger arm and has more arm talent overall than Jalen Hurts. I look at the season that Jalen Hurts has had, and I go, if Justin Fields is that, I'm now like happy because now we're talking about a guy that's going to throw for 3,400 yards, going to run for another 850 yards, is going to give you close to 40 touchdowns in run and pass, of 30 touchdowns run and pass. I feel like that would be a great development arc for Justin Fields in year two. So two questions here.
All right.
One, would that satisfy you? And two, what have the Eagles done to lean into Jalen Hurts' ability?
I think that Jalen Hurts, if Justin Fields is Jalen Hurts at this point next season, I suppose satisfactory would be fine. I think that's a fine term. I wouldn't be impressed with it per se. Like I think Jalen Hurts is a good comp because I believe Justin Fields is a souped up Jalen Hurts.
Agreed.
Not souped up from a sheer physical perspective, but I do believe he has been a more gifted passer, a more naturally gifted passer throughout the arc of his development. Now, Jalen Hurts is a more natural runner where, you know, straight line speed, Justin Fields is probably faster in straight line speed, but Jalen Hurts is a true runner as a quarterback. He is a skilled and a decisive, determined runner when he tucks it and he's going with the football, whereas Justin Fields is more trying to kind of, you know, true QB in his DNA from that standpoint, but he's just so gifted as an athlete that, yes, he takes off and runs, and he does it when it needs to happen. So, but I think as far as just them both being of a thick build, like a Donovan McNabb-esque kind of thicker build, where some of the finesse passes, some of the rhythm passes don't come as naturally to either one of them. But, you know, Justin Fields throughout, you know, amateur, and we've seen flashes of it in his pro career, just kind of deadly accurate with the deeper balls. And I think that, you know, maybe Dak Prescott, if Justin Fields is showing perhaps a Dak Prescott-ish kind of, you know, production arc, where like Jalen Hurts is right now still very up and down with his accuracy. And that's where I think that I would like to see, because of my evaluation of Jalen Hurts, I like the fact, almost like we're talking about with Travis Gibson.
Right.
Where I like where he's headed as a QB, but I don't think he's as naturally gifted as a passer as Justin Fields is. So I would like to see the consistency of accuracy that I feel like Justin Fields was showing up through that Pittsburgh game. Up through the Pittsburgh game before the bye week, I thought Fields showed himself as a guy where when he's in the pocket and he's throwing in rhythm and he knows where to go with the ball, he was deadly accurate up to that point. Last couple of times he's been in the lineup, you know, Baltimore and beyond, he's been a little more erratic with his accuracy. You know, part of that the ribs, part of that just, you know, just the development of a young QB. But I'd like to see consistency of accuracy for Fields by this point next year. I'd like to see that, you know, certainly beyond where Jalen Hurts is right now.
I agree. And it's so weird because I feel like there's some – you show nuance, but – there's already guys saying if he's Jalen Hurts, then he's a bust. Like, really?
Oh,
a quarterback that's taking his team to the playoffs. Like, that would make Justin Fields a bust if he turns out to be Jalen Hurts. Like, I feel like you're not – so I know you're watching Big Ant, but I feel like people are not actually watching the games. Jalen Hurts has 6 passer ratings this season above 100. Like, it's it's not like he's not just running around. And he's really good at throwing on the run, and he's been productive, and he's been good with the ball. 16 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. Look at where Justin Fields is statistically, and then tell me that if he wasn't year 2 Jalen Hurts, you wouldn't be happy. Like, it's just like I find it really odd that because Joe Burrow is having such a great start to his career, and Justin Herbert is putting up these incredible numbers, that you can't look at an actual, more realistic developmental track and be excited about that.
Right, and I think that, you know, in adding Dak Prescott to that mix, I think is a really good, you know, a good juxtaposition as well, because when you look at Dak season by season, where those initial years of Dak Prescott's time in Dallas, they still have one of the most dominant offensive lines in football. Zeke Elliott was still looking like one of the best running backs in football, and he had a volume of touches that was associated with that before Dak became this volume passer that they've asked him to become. But he was showing consistency of decision-making, decisiveness, accuracy, and, you know, where I said, you know, Justin Fields may be a bit of a souped-up Jalen Hurts. I think he's definitely kind of a souped-up Dak Prescott. But I think all three possess a lot of the same sort of elements of their DNA and their work ethic and the decisiveness of, you know, especially Dak, like being decisive as a passer, Jalen Hurts, that competitive DNA that's there. And I think all three possess elements of the intangible. And I think, you know, where Justin Fields is probably beyond both in certain ways, certainly a better athlete than Dak is, a more naturally gifted passer than Jalen Hurts is. And I feel like Justin Fields has a lot of elements of both that can maybe have him, you know, ascending at least, you know, to a similar plateau, and certainly hopefully beyond that.
Big Ant, as always, I appreciate the time. Thank you, sir. We will talk again next week.
All right, Loho. We'll do it.
That is Big Ant Heron. And maybe next week there'll actually be like changes that have happened. So maybe. I just want you to understand that what you're seeing from Justin Herbert, particularly, and Joe Burrow is not usually how this goes. And I'm not, I really, like, go look at Jalen Hurts' numbers and then look at Justin Fields' numbers this year. And then tell me that you wouldn't be happy if next year Justin Fields was looking more like Jalen Hurts. Because his numbers this year are not great. And even though we've had those flash moments, like someone said, well, Well, Mitch took his team to the playoffs. Right. Mitch wasn't, as they say, ascending as a player. I think that there is incremental growth in what you've seen in Jalen Hurts, and sometimes that growth is slow. I would still probably draft a quarterback. Maybe not in the first round if I'm Philly. I don't even know what their draft status is, but all I'm saying is that if you think that what happens next year is Justin Fields goes from this to Justin Herbert, that's a big ask. And it means a lot of things will have had to happen between now and next September. And how realistic is that? I'm trying to give you a more realistic scenario. And quite honestly, with Justin Fields' production, as high as I think his ceiling is, if he gives you the year that Jalen Hurts is giving the Eagles this year, it's a full-blown miracle. So maybe stop using his draft analysis, Jalen Hurts' draft analysis, against him and look at a player that's getting better. That's what we want for Justin Fields, is for him to get better. Quit turning up your nose at that. It's whack and shows that you're not paying attention. Back after this on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Lawrence Holmes live from Chicago, middays noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and Odyssey Station.
We had two semifinals that were not great. I mean, it was great for me, Roll Tide. But the SEC dominated yet again. I was surprised that Michigan got smacked. I thought that they would put up a much better fight. I mean, I was talking with Joe last week about the plus 7.5. That seemed like, oh, all right, let's do that. And they got mollywopped. Matt Fortuna covers college football for The Athletic. He's a friend of the show. He joins me on the Circuit Resort and Casino Hotline. Circuit Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. What's up, Matt?
Lawrence, how you doing, buddy?
Man, I'm doing great. I appreciate you joining me. I want to start with the Georgia-Michigan game. Maybe I shouldn't have been surprised, considering that Georgia's defense outside of the Alabama game was only giving up 7 points a game. But I felt like Michigan had enough firepower defensively that they would be able to pressure Stetson Bennett more than they did. What happened to them?
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I saw that line as well. I thought, you know what, I've kind of slept on Michigan all year. I've been kind of the biggest downer, if you will, on Jim Harbaugh, just based on everything we had seen up to this year from him at Michigan in big games. And after the way they finished with Ohio State and Iowa winning both those games the way they did, I just thought, you know what, physically this was a much tougher team than I had given it credit for all year. And I expect them to go punch for punch with Georgia. Obviously, that ended up not being the case. I think Georgia's defense has been so good for so long throughout this season that we may have underestimated and overlooked just how much firepower there is on that offense. I mean, we focus so much on what they don't have, right? They have essentially a walk-on at quarterback in Stetson Bennett, and we saw how they weren't able to go toe-for-toe with Alabama on the big stage of the SEC title game, that I think we let that probably cloud our judgment a little bit, because I definitely thought going into the semifinal matchup that Michigan's defense would be able to contain Georgia and at least give them a good game, give Michigan a puncher's chance in the second half to maybe win that game. And as we saw after the first couple drives, it was clearly two teams played in two different leagues.
Does Jim Harbaugh and do Michigan fans still consider this a successful season?
I don't know how you don't, right? I mean, they had not won a Big Ten championship since, I think, 2004, which is crazy. I mean, they've still only won, what, half a championship in the last 70 years or so? I mean, it's Michigan, and I say that in twofold fashion. One is they're the winningest program in the history of college football, so obviously they should have very high expectations. But two, I mean, they don't operate institutionally like the Ohio States of the world, like the Alabamas of the world. I mean, they practically renamed Ann Arbor for Bo Schembechler, who never won a national title and who was not a very good big game coach. I think he was 500 against Ohio State for his career. So they don't value national championships at that program the way they do at so many other, you know, blue blood programs around the country. So I don't know how you can look at this season at anything other than a success. And Jim Harbaugh said as much in his post game interview. He said this will go down as one of the better teams in Michigan history. So, I mean, good on them for turning it around as strongly and as quickly as they did from 2020 to 2021. But certainly they saw in the semifinal just how big the distance is, the gap is between them and the national championship.
What do you think the Big Ten takes away from this season? Because you have this incredible game that Ohio State plays against Utah at the Rose Bowl. It's very exciting, fun, picturesque, all of that. You have your champion getting smacked in the college football playoffs. You had three teams in one division that were terrific. If you're the Big Ten, how happy are you about this past season?
I think you're content. I mean, you're not, you know, dancing in the street celebrating right now. You're not thinking the sky is falling. I think, look, a lot of the programs that we've become used to seeing succeed every year did not have great seasons. Penn State ended up finishing very poorly. Wisconsin was not its usual self, although they ended the season pretty strong. I think Ohio State, talent for talent, as we saw in the Rose Bowl, even with all those opt-outs, looks as good as all but maybe one or two teams in the country at their best. And they clearly were disadvantaged, if you will, defensively. They just never were able to get the most out of that side of the ball. They hired a new defense coordinator for next year in Jim Knowles, who, as we saw, even without him this past week at Oklahoma State, really turned around that program defensively and got them to be one of the better defensive teams in the country. So I think as long as Ohio State operates the way they have been operating, as long as Ryan Day doesn't leave to come to the Chicago Bears or something like that, I think you're as strong or as weak as your strongest link, and Ohio State's still operating at a very high level. Michigan showed this year that they're capable of taking it up a notch and operating at another level. And I don't expect Penn State and Wisconsin to be as underwhelming as they were really these last 2 years.
Does Ryan Day have any interest in the NFL outside of using it for leverage? Is that a goal of his? Because there are some coaches that really like coaching the college game, and maybe the NFL isn't necessarily on their radar.
I have no idea. I mean, I don't know the guy personally, so I don't want to impose and try to pretend what he may be thinking. I mean, I do think, look, he has an NFL background, right? He worked with Chip Kelly, I think, in Philly and in San Francisco, so he knows what that league is about. I do think, generally speaking, the idea of being an NFL head coach right now as opposed to a college head coach is definitely more appealing to most guys, I think. I mean, when you look, a few years ago, I think if you asked this question, a lot of the college coaches would have said, well, in college, you get to be the GM and the head coach, essentially, right? You get more power. You get to pick your roster. And no matter how good or bad you are in a given year, you can go out there and recruit another class however you see fit. Now, with the portal, with NIL, with opt-outs, with all this sky is falling stuff to hear the game day crew tell it, you don't have that control anymore. And when you go to the NFL – and I know people who have worked at both levels, and especially right now, they're saying our jobs right now at the NFL are so much easier. Like, our off seasons are not spent chasing 16 and 17-year-olds around the country. We can just focus on game plans, focus on roster construction, focus on things off the field that we need to get done. It's a different game right now, and I think as long as you're comfortable with the idea of maybe moving every 2 years, because that's pretty much the lifespan of an NFL head coach or really anyone at a coaching level, at any coaching level in the NFL, as long as you make your peace with that, I can see why that would be a more attractive lifestyle to to a coach who has options at either level. But I absolutely have no idea what Ryan Day is thinking right now.
Yeah, Matt, it's sad for Matt Corral, where on this day where mm-hmm. we're having the discussion about putting out for the team, that I think Matt Corral is still going to be a first-round draft pick. But it just sucked to have Herbie on there, not my Herbie, Kirk Herbstreit on the TV talking about kids not loving to play, and people trying to explain that it's risk reward, and then seeing Matt Corral in the game and end his season with an injury as he gets ready for the NFL draft. It just seems so like poetic.
Yeah, I mean, I feel bad that like that's the first conversation we have about this guy as he goes down on the biggest stage of his career to that point, right? Like, it's just I almost refuse to believe everyone can have this many opinions about this like issue, if you even want to call it an issue. Like, I don't see it as an issue. I see it as people doing whatever is in their best interest. I mean, Brian Kelly left Notre Dame before they found out whether or not they'd be in the playoff or not, right? Like, is that not loving football? Is that quitting on your team? Brian Kelly last year threatened to boycott the Rose Bowl because they weren't going to allow parents in the stands. And he said, we're worshiping and bowing to the ashes of tradition here, which obviously the ESPN folks must see it differently. I will also say, might not be the best idea to fly your A-team, let alone any broadcast team in the country, from Miami to L.A. overnight and have them get on a pregame show on probably 0 hours of sleep. Because I know I would be in a bit of a prickly mood, and I'm sure those guys were as they were going on their get off my lawn rants as well.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. Did Cincinnati play as well as they could against Alabama?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I thought going in, I don't want to judge these guys too harshly if they get blown out against Alabama, because as we've seen, Alabama does this to literally everybody in the semifinals. There's a reason they're playing, I think, in their sixth championship game over the last 7 years. I thought, you know, watching that game real time, it felt like they were a little bit closer than the final score ended up being.
I wish
they had taken a few more shots downfield. I wish they'd tried something a little bit different. I'm not saying they played to not get embarrassed. I'm not saying they got out of character, but I left that game a little unsatisfied. I'm not saying they were going to beat Alabama by any stretch of the imagination, but I do think there were a couple plays to be made there that would have given them, you know, a little more of a happy face at the end of that. But at the end of the day, as you know, it's just a different ball game when you give Nick Saban a month to prepare for anybody. He's just absolutely going to get the most out of his team, and he's usually going to suck the life out of whoever he's beating at that point as well.
Well, Georgia didn't lose the same game twice because they won their semifinal game. Mm-hmm. Which one of these teams do you think uses the last game they play to a bigger advantage?
Well, I do think it's ironic that after Alabama beat Georgia in the SEC title game, Saban goes on this rant about how much he appreciated the rat poison going Georgia's way since they were the favorite in that game. And I know Georgia's a betting favorite in this game in the rematch as well, but you have to think that the media attention, the rat poison, whatever you want to call it, is going to be all on Alabama's side right now, right? I mean, whether Vegas says so or not, I think – the entire world outside of the state of Georgia is expecting Alabama to win this game because that's what Alabama does on this stage. And quite frankly, that's what Georgia does on this stage. They always find a way to blow it, especially against Nick Saban. But, you know, Nick Saban's going to have to really dive deep into his bag of tricks, at least motivationally speaking, to get his guys to believe they're the underdog against a team they just beat by 17 points a month ago. It's going to be very interesting. It's going to be even more interesting the fact that it's in Indianapolis. I think we're looking at a 24-degree night Monday night a week from now. I wish they could play that game outdoors with those two Southern teams. I think that would make it a much more compelling contest with those two defenses. But no question about it, Nick Saban is no longer playing hunter against Georgia. He's being the hunted against his protege, Kirby Smart. But you know, maybe this is Georgia year. I mean, the Braves broke through in October. It's been a pretty tortured sports state the last two or three decades, but maybe things are finally starting to turn around for that state with Georgia again, another chance at Alabama here, and with the Braves winning a couple months ago.
Matt, as always, I appreciate the time, man. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks, Lawrence. Anytime, buddy.
That is Matt Fortuna. You can check him out on The Athletic. I have a subscription to The Athletic. I think that you should get one too. It's really good. You get to see a lot of great writers and reporters from around the country doing, and Matt's right here. Like, he's local, but he covers college football really, really well.
And we thank him for joining us on the Circuit Resort and Casino Hotline. Circuit Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Herbie, can we do the Casey Johnson here? It was so weird what was going on Saturday night, where you have Casey Johnson being thrust into being the play-by-play guy for the Bulls. If you didn't know this because you were doing your own thing, this is what happened. Adam Amin took a COVID test because you, at the broadcast level, you get tested like everyone else. He either got a false positive or was inconclusive or something, so they had to pull him from the broadcast. So Casey Johnson is the reporter. He was actually on site. So him and Robbie Hummel, who I don't think had ever worked together, and Casey had joked that Robbie had asked him, is it Casey or is it KC, when they were getting to work together. Shout out to Mark Brady, who is one of the best sports producers in the business. This was KC Johnson talking on NBC Sports Chicago about finding out that he was doing the game and then what happened.
Steal by the Bulls, DeRozan pushing the ball up court, kicks it ahead to Zach LaVine, still lethal in transition, and that's a fast break basket, and another example of the Bulls scoring points off turnovers, as they have done all season.
That was our very own KC Johnson on the play-by-play call to start yesterday's game. KC joins us now via WebEx by Cisco. KC, that resume, man. Bulls historian, Bulls beat reporter, and of course, writer extraordinaire. Now you can throw in there, play-by-play guy. How would you have felt, and shout out to Adam Amin and getting back, making sure everything is good on Adam's part, but you know, you saw quite the shot at the end of that game there. Was any part of you watching that like, man, wish I would have been able to call that last second DeMar DeRozan not looking up at the shot clock, sixth game in a row winner?
I've had that question a few times from friends or fans, Jason, and my response is, because people ask me, how would have you handled that call? And my response is, I would have passed out. I don't have that tool in the trick bag, man. I didn't know what I was doing. I had a blast. Shout out to Mark Brady, our fantastic producer, and Robbie Hummel, who I just met that night, was very solid. And obviously I was the happiest person in the building when Adam Amin returned from the testing protocols.
Yeah, so that's another part of this. So they figured out what had gone wrong with Adam's test. He goes back. He takes over the game. You getting that great call at the end of the game with DeMar DeRozan. KC wrote about it today, and it was great. As someone who dabbles in play-by-play, hearing him talk about how he was doing, now as he was driving back home, that he realizes he was doing a radio call for a television game. And they're very different in the way that you prepare them, in the things that you talk about. You don't need as many descriptors on a television play-by-play call, obviously, because people can see what's going on. But shout out to him. That is not easy at all. Adam Amin works, you should see his boards. The board that a play-by-play guy or girl has for their game is like Matt Nagy's playbook. Okay, like the play card that he has. So he has all of that stuff to understand who the players are in the game, what stories to tell about that player, when to interject those stories. KC is prepped for the game, but it's not prepped to do play-by-play. It's a different set of skills. So to see him walk into that and be able to do it as well as he did, hats off to him. That bleep is hard.
And it's COVID season, so Indy has a bunch of players that you've never heard of in your life before. Even the Bulls might have had some players that came up and he's like, I don't have any book on this person.
Absolutely. And it would be one thing if it were Stacey King that were sitting in the chair. But it's also a guy that's been doing a great job, by the way. Robbie Hummel, between that and his classes, I don't know how he's doing it. But he's been doing a wonderful job as a fill-in color analyst. It's not a guy that you have rapport with.
Then you got a game tomorrow,
I'm
too,
sure that Purdue has a game that Robbie has to get ready for, and yet he's still able to do color commentary. I think it's all amazing. I don't even know if I'm expressing to you how difficult what KC did was, but I can tell you, having done some play-by-play, you spend days getting ready for a game.
to do it at a moment's notice, shout out to KC. Shout out to Mark Brady. Shout out to Robbie Hummel. They did an incredible job. And then Adam Amin just like pops back into the chair. It's like, oh, okay. KC was flying the plane for us, y'all. Like someone's like, hey, does anyone have any flying experience? The captain is ill. And KC was like, I've flown a prop plane. Okay, you're flying this jet now. Oh, bleep. And everything was fine. So congrats to him and everyone over at NBC Sports Chicago. That was an incredible pivot, and Mark Brady is the real. Back after this on The Score.
Lawrence Holmes live from Chicago, middays noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and Odyssey Station.
In watching yesterday's game, I am at the place, and I know that this is about gratification and how quickly we can get it, but I am at the place of this just needs to be over, all of it, and maybe it'll end at the end of the game against the Vikings on Sunday, or maybe the Bears will tell us that they still haven't figured out exactly what they want to do, or maybe they'll tell you that everything is fine and they're going to run it back. But I think that's my interpretation of how Bears fans watched yesterday's game of they just wanted the game to be over, and they just want the season to be over. And they want to get to a place where they can enjoy the playoffs because they know that the Bears are trying to make moves to move into the right direction. But I said it at the beginning of the show, and I'll say it here at the end. As we've spent a lot of time talking about Matt Nagy and all the things that he isn't and all the things that make us uncomfortable with him being the Bears head coach, there was no better shining example of Ryan Pace's general manager than what was happening at quarterback on both teams yesterday. Andy Dalton completed 50% of his passes against a team that doesn't want to be there and short fields yesterday. And Mike Glennon was out here bumbling around like it was 4 years ago. Do not lose the image of Mike Glennon doing exactly what he did for the Bears, for the Giants yesterday. And don't forget that Ryan Pace thought it was a good idea to guarantee that guy $20 million. Don't forget it. I'll talk with Parkinson Spiegel next here on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.